Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, June 11th. I'm Jordan Pangelinan, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, prescribed burns planned for southern Humboldt grasslands, Measure O's first-year plan presented, and Clean California Project revitalizes community spaces and showcases the natural beauty of the Eel River. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. A prescribed burn is planned for southern Humboldt grasslands this Thursday, June 12th, at the Southern Humboldt Community Park just outside Garberville. This project is a joint effort between the Southern Humboldt Chapter of the Humboldt County Prescribed Burn Association, Bryceland Volunteer Fire Department, Telegraph Ridge Volunteer Fire Department, and other local cooperators. This late spring prescribed fire focuses on controlled barbed goatgrass, a non-native invasive annual grass. Barbed goatgrass is unpalatable to livestock and can injure wildlife by embedding sharp seeds into their mouths, eyes, and skin. Since first being identified in southern Humboldt approximately 4 years ago, it has spread rapidly, displacing native grass species and threatening both ecological, biodiversity, and ranching livelihoods. Prescribed fire is a cost-effective and ecologically sound tool for reducing invasive species and maintaining the health of our region's rare native perennial grasslands. Smoke may be visible from Garberville and surrounding areas during burn operations. Project is fully permitted and carefully planned with our air quality and public safety in mind. Fire crews will remain on site throughout the day to monitor and manage the burn. A plan for road projects using the first year of Measure O sales tax revenue has been presented to Humboldt County supervisors, Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County has approved a plan for the first year of Measure O roads and public transit sales tax spending, which totals $24 million. The specifics of Measure O spending were detailed by Public Works Director Tom Mattson during a June 9th Board of Supervisors hearing on the county budget. Measure O's first year will include grant matches that will leverage outside funding for a variety of road improvement projects, including on Alder Point, Matole, and Shively Roads, and the Honeydew Bridge. Road resurfacing projects in the first-year plan include three segments of Alder Point Road and, in the North County area, Jacoby Creek Road, Patrick's Point Drive, and Myrtle Avenue in the Indianola area. Segments of Old Bryceland and Matole Roads and Redway Drive are included in a list of second-tier projects that will be done if any of the priority projects face unexpected delays. As for what's to come beyond the first year, that's iffy to predict, as explained in this exchange between Board Chair Michelle Bushnell and Mattson.
When this report came out on the agenda, you know, I got some calls already from constituents saying, I don't see Shelter Cove on there, blah, blah, blah. So I'm wondering, this is for your 1 year, right?
This is year one.
Okay. So is there a way, Tom, to say, so that we can answer questions of people if they have them, to say, do you know what the second year looks like?
We can estimate the second year, but based on any given winter, that could completely change. And so we ran this through our Street Saver program, which is generally going to tell us what I've been telling you for years, is we need to maintain our good roads in good shape and pick up the bad ones a little bit at a time.
Mattson added that road projects are chosen under a scientific process, and although long-range forecasting is difficult, there's no doubt that Measure O spending will help address a road maintenance backlog.
I can present a much longer plan, but I can tell you that it will be very hazy after year one because so much changes every year. If it's a perfect world, I could predict you a five-year plan. But I don't know, you know, if I get a big equipment breakdown, I'm going to need to move money. If we have major storm damage, I'm going to need to move money. This is not a magic solution to the entire road system. It is a huge shot in the arm, which will finally give us a surfacing program every year instead of a throw at the dart. And so I recommend we be very, very careful about putting in outer years.
The $24 million of first-year spending is divided into various pots of spending. $2.5 million will be for winter storm damage repairs, $4 million will pay for grant matches, $9 million for surfacing, $6 million for personnel, equipment maintenance, and materials, and $1.6 million mostly for ADA-compliant curbsides and ramps. Supervisor Mike Wilson vouched for spending on multimodal complete streets projects, but said he's still very impressed by the plan. So is Supervisor Steve Madrone, who said Measure O is valuable for being a consistent local source of funding.
I mean, the good news that we're going to just continuously tell people is, thank you. We now have funding to actually make progress on everything over time. Give us 50 years and we'll get to your road. Give us 10 years, we'll get to your road. So I like the concept. I like the way you're putting it in. And I like that you're prioritizing leverage. You know, like you said, where we can put $4 million in and get $20 or $30 million back, that's huge. And it's also so great that this is our money. The state and the feds can't touch it. You know, so that's an incredible aspect given all the news we heard from the feds and the state lobbyists about where things are at. Well, this one we don't have to worry about. We can program. We can budget for.
Also during the day's budget hearings, supervisors approved $500,000 of American Rescue Plan Act funding for potential creation of a child care facility for county employees. The first step will be a feasibility study that will assess the costs and benefits of doing it. County staff was also directed to return with a budget plan for county parks and trails, whose current funding was described as being too sparse to allow parks to remain open through this summer. The county budget is set for approval on June 24th. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mentz.
The City of Rio Del, in partnership with Caltrans and the Clean California Program, has connected multiple communities with a new trail path along the bank of the Eel River. A ribbon-cutting ceremony happened yesterday at the Edwards Trailhead, celebrating the natural beauty of the waterway and unveiled a transformed portion of the riverfront. This $2.3 million Clean California grant project installed a new quarter-mile paved, non-motorized path that runs along the west bank of the Eel River, linking previously unconnected streets and providing the first designated public access point to the river. There are interpretive monuments placed along the trail, highlighting the river's ecological and cultural importance, offering an educational experience for residents and visitors. The City of Rio Del was also awarded nearly $198,000 in Clean California grant funding for landscaping and recreation upgrades along Wildwood Avenue. Rio Del Mayor Deborah Garnes had this to say in a press release regarding the opening of the new trail. In quote, "This trail is more than just a path. It's a way for our community to connect with the river, with nature, and with one another," said Garnes. "It also transforms what was once an overgrowing dump site into a vibrant and educational corridor," end quote. Caltrans District 1 Director Matthew Brady also had this to say in the press release, end quote, "Clean California is about more than cleaning up trash. It restores pride and purpose in our shared public spaces," said Brady. The Eel River Trail is a shining example of what is possible when state and local partners come together to invest in the health and vitality of our communities, end quote. Adding a special community touch, students and faculty from Eagle Prairie Elementary School played a key role throughout the project, serving as trail stewards and advocates for its success. The ribbon-cutting event included representatives from the City of Rio Del, Caltrans, Redwood Community Action Agency, the Community of Humboldt, and local environmental and trail organizations. The Eel River Trail is a testament to the power of partnerships and the potential for state investment to create safer, cleaner, and more accessible public spaces in communities like Rio Del. For more information, visit cleanca.com. In state news, city workers, residents rally against Mayor Lurie's SF budget, want alternatives to cuts. KPFA's Alice Otteson reports.
Mayor Daniel Lurie's plan aims to close a $782 million budget shortfall. It eliminates 1,400 city positions, including more than 100 that are currently filled, and reduces funding for certain mental health programs, workforce development, and community-based housing support. Organizers say the cuts could have devastating consequences, particularly for the city's most vulnerable communities. Tina Santacara from community group All My Usos.
93% cuts to food security programs is not how you create a better San Francisco. That is creating a pipeline to layoffs, to no jobs, to no income, to increase the poverty.
Some critics also take issue with who's being spared. Lurie's proposal preserves or increases funding for police, fire, and sheriff's departments, while nonprofit partners and social services face cuts. Union leaders say the city could free up more money by urging Airbnb and other corporations to drop lawsuits seeking to reclaim over $400 million in taxes, a proposal the mayor has thus far ignored. Teresa Rutherford, SEIU president.
Almost 50% of that deficit is being driven by rich corporations who are benefiting from our work, our service, this city, and are refusing to do what they are supposed to do, which is pay their fair share.
Dozens of protesters later filled a budget hearing inside City Hall. The Board of Supervisors must decide whether to approve the mayor's proposal or demand changes before the July 1st deadline. For KPFA, I'm Alice Otteson.
Trump action sparks outrage from local and state leaders, Dems, unions, and a lawsuit. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
President Donald Trump's use of the military to quell protests in Los Angeles over the weekend has sparked outrage from local and state officials, from all of the nation's Democratic governors, and also a lawsuit by Governor Gavin Newsom and State Attorney General Rob Bonta.
I, in partnership with Governor Gavin Newsom, are suing President Trump and asking the court to set aside the president's unlawful action federalizing the California National Guard.
Trump's action marks the first time since 1965 that a president has mobilized a state's National Guard without a request from the governor. Trump used a law that enables the president to mobilize the National Guard under three specific conditions, none of which were met, according to Bonta.
Let's be very clear. There was no risk of rebellion, no threat of foreign invasion, no inability for the federal government to enforce federal laws. It's no accident that the right to peaceful protest is in the First Amendment. It's because peaceful protest is a cornerstone of any healthy democracy.
Bonta says local police and sheriffs did not request help from neighboring law enforcement, and the protests were under control until, he says, Trump and Homeland Security Secretary Pete Hegseth escalated things by ordering in the troops. Bonta calls that an inflammatory escalation. President Trump spoke to reporters Monday.
The people that are causing the problem are professional agitators, they're insurrectionists, they're bad people, they should be in jail. Thank you.
House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries blasted Trump's actions in his news conference Monday, saying Trump is trying to distract from his failed administration.
You know what he did on day one? He pardoned hundreds of violent felons who brutally beat police officers. That's the insurrection. And so the notion that Donald Trump and his minions, his sycophants here in the House of Representatives or in the Senate, who are nothing more than a reckless rubber stamp for Donald Trump's extreme agenda, are going to lecture America about issues of law and order, get lost. We're not feeling you at all. You have zero credibility on this issue.
Others are also criticizing the use of the National Guard. The Congressional Hispanic Caucus is calling for an investigation into the handling of the protests, and some activists are protesting the arrest of labor leader David Huerta, head of SEIU California. Teachers union leaders and others rallied Monday in Washington, D.C., where they were joined by Washington State Democrat Pramila Jayapal. She's the ranking Democrat on the Immigration Subcommittee. And also, she says, a naturalized citizen and proud immigrant doing immigrant rights.
I have one word for you today. Enough! Enough of these mass ICE raids that are sweeping up innocent people of every legal status, tearing apart families and our communities. Do you say enough?
Enough!
And the arrests of community members and leaders like the incredible SEIU president, David Huerta. Yeah. David is a champion of civil rights. He is somebody who is simply standing up peacefully for justice. Someone who is one of the best of our country's labor movement. Free him immediately.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the situation remains fluid. The Trump administration is reportedly planning to beef up its military presence in Los Angeles with about 700 Marines from their base in Southern California. As for the activists, Jayapal says they're standing up for our communities.
Don't tear us apart! We are going to stand united against this authoritarian power grab!
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In national news, UN Oceans Conference aims at treaty to protect oceans. KPFA's Sophia Rice Elfany reports.
The 2025 United Nations Ocean Conference opened Monday in Nice with strong calls to speed up global efforts to protect and sustainably manage the ocean. The conference takes place over the next 5 days and brings together world leaders to work on stronger international agreements, more inclusive cooperation, and greater investment in ocean science and protection. Climate change and human activity are placing increasing strain on the ocean. Record-breaking heat is damaging marine life, while pollution, overfishing, and biodiversity loss are driving ocean ecosystems toward a critical tipping point. President Rodrigo Chavez Robles of Costa Rica, one of the co-hosting countries, spoke at the opening ceremony through an interpreter, saying the ocean is speaking to us.
Not speaking to us with words. It's speaking to us with bleached coral reefs, the storms that strike more and more frequently and harsher. It's speaking with the wounded mangroves and sadly with species that will never return. But the ocean is telling us something very clear. It's saying that there is no more time left for demagogic rhetoric, but rather it is now the time to act.
This year's conference focuses on translating promises into action. Two key issues under discussion are the Marine Biodiversity Treaty, adopted in 2023, and the 30 by 30 Ocean Action Plan that was launched Monday. The Marine Biodiversity Treaty aims at protecting marine life in areas that lie beyond the jurisdiction of any single nation. The treaty is currently in the ratification phase, with dozens of countries having signed it. It is seen as a crucial step toward achieving the 30 by 30 Ocean Action Plan goal, protecting 30% of the planet's land and ocean by 2030. Currently, less than 9% of the ocean is protected. The 2030 target is a bold one, but for many advocates, simply moving in the right direction is cause for optimism. Emmanuel Gonzalez is the chief scientist of the Océano Azul Foundation.
It's a start, but we need to go further and we need to go faster. And so this perception gives us a clear paint that we are going to fail 30 by 30. But it's okay, we failed 2010, we failed 2020. The important thing is what are we going to do in 2026, 2027, 2028, 2029, and then we will see where we are in 2030. And we don't have that roadmap. And this is what's on the table right now, is having a roadmap that allows us to assess where we are as we go.
A special treaty event was scheduled for later Monday to provide an opportunity for states to sign the agreement. It will be clear by the end of the day whether the treaty has reached the 60 ratifications needed to take effect. This is Sophia Rice-Elfany for Pacifica Radio News, KPFA.
Head Secretary Mick Mahon defends $12 billion budget cut. Opponents blast weapons of Fed funding, KPFA's Kennedy Cuello reports.
Secretary of Education Linda McMahon defended the proposed $12 billion budget cut for the Department of Education in the Senate Appropriations Committee Tuesday. The major budget cuts suggest the department's elimination is indeed on the table, but will be a slower process. Ranking Democrat on the Labor, Health and Human Services, Education, and Related Agencies Subcommittee, Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin, focused on the reasoning behind the cuts. She questioned the administration's justification that the cuts are to return the power to the states, saying it is in direct opposition to actions the administration has taken lately.
You claim the administration's goal of eliminating the department is about returning education to the states. At the same time, this administration is attempting to exert more control than ever over the decisions in our schools and campuses. This includes demanding that states certify that they are not implementing DEI, which the department purposefully left vague so it could cut off funding whenever it chooses.
The proposed budget would eliminate TRIO, a collection of programs to help low-income, first-generation, and disabled college students succeed in university. This was met with criticism from senators on both sides, including Republican Senator Suzanne Collins of Maine, who said that the program has changed the lives of students across the country. Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon, in a back-and-forth with McMahon, called the elimination of TRIO programs an attack on middle- and working-class kids.
It just seems like a cover story for saying we don't want to help blue-collar kids make it into college. And I must tell you, most of my colleagues here, they're not blue-collar kids. I am. I know how hard it was to make that leap into college. I know the difficulty of the culture when you grow up in high school and you never talk to anybody about going to college and you don't understand what that's all about in that world. And these TRIO programs have resulted in 6 million students graduating through those programs. And you want accountability? Well, what did those studies say that have been done by the Department of Education?
A major focus amongst Democrats was the weaponization of federal funding to make schools comply with the administration's goals. Specifically, they focused on Trump's battle with Harvard. McMahon says the battle is a result of anti-Semitism on campuses, pulling funding for not having what she calls viewpoint diversity, essentially for not having major space for conservative voices. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut engaged in a back and forth with McMahon when she implied that the university is breaking the law.
They needed to do things on their campus to eliminate anti-Semitism. That was kind of the crux of what brought us into talking to the different universities. And then we sat down with them to say, okay, these are other issues that you need to address on your campus because you do receive federal funding.
I'm
and
well
under
over,
federal funding, if you are breaking the law,
I'm
which
well
they did
time,
under Title VI.
I know, I don't
well,
understand any conception
question,
of
it was
civil
Title
rights
VI.
Law to give you the authorization to micromanage viewpoint diversity on campus. That's not authorized under the civil rights title provided to you by the United States Congress.
The funding changes are part of a larger budget request for the 2026 fiscal year. For KPFA News, I'm Kennedy Cuello.
We close tonight's news with the Public News Service Daily Newscast. Mike Clifford reports.
This is not the image Army officials had wanted. That's the take from the New York Times. They report while tanks, armored troop carriers, and artillery systems pour into Washington for the Army's 250th birthday celebration, National Guard troops from the Army's 79th Infantry Brigade Command Team, supplemented by active-duty Marines, have been deployed to the streets of Los Angeles. Max Rose, a Democratic congressman and Army veteran, said the two scenes combined erode trust in the military at a time when the military should be a symbol of national unity. The Times notes some veterans groups soured on the parade well before the deployments in Los Angeles. The Army recently asked the Vietnam Veterans of America chapter in North Virginia if it would provide 25 veterans to sit in the official reviewing stand. The group said no. Meantime, California companies that make compostable packaging materials say their products could make a huge dent in the problem of plastic pollution. but only with changes to state and federal policy.
California passed Senate Bill 54 in 2022. It requires single-use packaging and plastic foodware to be either recyclable or compostable by 2032. The issue is with a companion bill, Assembly Bill 1201, which said compostable materials must be certified organic. John Feltz is CEO of Cruz Foam, based in Santa Cruz, making compostable packaging foam from food waste.
The idea that all compostable packaging would have to comply would effectively remove compostable packaging from being viable. The cost, the tracking, making a fully certified organic packaging material is nearly impossible.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
And new research has detected hog feces in the homes of people who live near industrial farming operations in North Carolina.
The research was conducted in Duplin County in eastern North Carolina, where community members have struggled to convince leaders about the hazards of large hog operations. Duplin County resident and co-founder of Rural Empowerment Association for Community Help, Devin Hall, recalls a presentation he gave to the county commission.
One of the county commissioners has asked, has anyone died and an autopsy been performed to prove they died from hydrogen sulfide exposure? That was a bit cold, you know, because that's what you're asking for. You want body bags.
Hogs generate 10 billion gallons of waste every year in North Carolina. I'm Eric Tegedoff reporting.
This story with original reporting from Dawn Atride for Sentient Science. Next to the Sunshine State, where Florida Power and Light's request for a nearly $9 billion rate hike, possibly the largest in state history, has sparked concern about the potential burden on people already struggling with high energy costs. Maria Claudia Schubert Fontes with Catalyst Miami warns the impact on low-income households could be devastating.
Folks are spending a large portion of their income just to keep the lights on every month.
The Florida Public Service Commission is reviewing FPL's proposal, which the utility says is needed for grid resilience, population growth, and storm recovery. This is Public News Service. Indiana's largest LGBTQ plus celebration kicks off this weekend as Indy Pride marks its 30th anniversary.
A parade steps off Saturday morning at 10 on Mass Ave, followed by a free community gathering at Monument Circle and a two-day concert at American Legion Mall. Tina Robb with Indy Pride expects tens of thousands of people to attend and says this year's message is about visibility and unity.
Pride started out as a protest, and as we are seeing in 2025, our rights are being stripped away daily. So while it started as a protest, it's going to continue as a protest, and this is our 30th anniversary. So we chose to be loud and bigger than ever this year.
Organizers say the expanded festival reflects both the urgency of the moment and the power of community. I'm Joe O'Leary, Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And immigrant rights groups say they are considering legal action to try and restore a Texas law allowing in-state tuition rates for undocumented college students.
The move comes after the Department of Justice sued Texas, and within hours, state officials complied without a fight. According to the U.S. Attorney General, federal law prohibits schools from providing benefits to undocumented students that they don't provide to U.S. citizens. Immigration attorney Kelly Cobb says the law has been on the books since 2001.
They get the same residency requirement as someone that was born here. And I think, it's more of a policy argument. These were children brought here, and why should they be penalized and have to pay higher tuition?
Texas was the first state to enact such a law to help young adults without legal status. Conservative legislators have tried to repeal the law for years. Cobb says if an appeal is filed, a judge could allow the law to remain in effect through the appeals process. I'm Frieda Ross reporting.
Finally, creative folks often say poetry is almost everywhere you look, and sidewalks across the Midwest, including in Minnesota, are proving it.
Sidewalk poetry programs have risen across the region, stemming from an initiative started in Minnesota's capital city by behavioral artist Marcus Young back in 2008. St. Paul adopted the first such program in the country, inspired by sidewalk contractor stamps. Young says he remembers thinking if he can print those logos on these large sections of pavement, why not other things like poems?
I think it all goes back to like our universal desire that when we see wet concrete, we want to put our finger in it and just mark that I was here.
St. Paul's program allows residents to claim the sidewalks as their book pages every spring.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
that's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Alice Audison, Christopher Martinez, Sophia Rice Elfany, Kennedy Cuello, and Mike Clifford. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.